सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। So the last time we met, we saw the portion where Arjun, seeing the Ati Ugra Roop, the most fierce form of Bhagwan, got really scared and then requested Bhagwan to come back into his original form, and Bhagwan agrees. I also told you that the Ati Ugra Roop, the very, very fierce form, is also required. Just as the very enchanting form is required, and then a little bit, you know, fierce, and then more fierce. Because when there is that much adharma, then Bhagwan has to become very, very fierce to wipe all that out. And that's what happened in the Mahabharata war, is that all the Kauravas were destroyed. So, but because Arjun was scared, Bhagwan said, okay, by my grace, we saw verse 47, by my grace, you have seen my form, and now I shall come back into my original form. And I told you that he comes, then he says that form cannot be obtained by Vedas, means studying of the Vedas or Yajnas or charity, or, because they all fall under the category of action, karma. So karma can never give you that vision of that form. But because you're a devotee of mine, and more than you wanting to see it, I wanted to show it to you. So only by my grace can anyone see this this form. And he says, do not be mate vyatha macha vimuda bhava. Do not be afraid. I will now come back. And I told you he comes back into his chaturbhuja roop. So with his four arms, he was born with four arms. He was, and he could withdraw his two arms at any point. And after that, he comes back into his Manushya Roop. Manushya Roop is with two arms. That's where we had stopped, 49, at verse 49. So we now go on to Sanjay Uvacha 50. Sanjay Uvacha ityarjunam vastu. इत्यर्जुनं वासुदेवस्तथोक्त्वा स्वकं रूपं दर्शयामास भूयः आश्वासयामास च भीतमेनं भूत्वा पुनः सौम्य वपुर्महात्मा। संजय सेड, नाउ इट शिफ्ट्स टू संजय, हैविंग दस स्पोकन टू अर्जुन, बिकॉज प्रीवियसली इट वाज श्री भगवान उवाच, हैविंग दस स्पोकन टू अर्जुन, वासुदेव अगेन शोड हिज ओन फॉर्म And the great souled one, assuming his gentle form, consoled him who was terrified. Iti Arjunam Vasudeva Tatha Uktva. Uktva, having said, having thus said to Arjun, Vasudev, he came to his original, Swakam is his original form. And by original form, it means the form that he had at birth, which means that he had four arms. Because at birth, he was born with four arms. There is a story I remembered about Shishupala. See, Shishupala was born with four arms, I think. And his mother was very worried. Yeah, Shishupala also was born with four arms. So his mother was very worried that how come this, my child has got four arms, that is not, normal. And what she was told was that he will see somebody, and when he sees that somebody, his two arms will disappear, but that somebody will be the cause of his death. And so it so happens that when Bhagwan and Balram are there. Shishupala goes to their house. This is very vaguely I'm remembering, but Shishupala goes to, that baby, they come to see the baby, huh? Correct. So Shishupala is born, he's a baby, and Bhagwan is already there. Shri Krishna and Balram are there. They go to see this baby. They're related. Some relationship is there. But the minute Bhagwan comes into the room and sees the baby, the two arms disappear. So the mother says to Krishna that, you know what, this is what I was told, and now the two arms have disappeared. So are you going to kill my son? And then Bhagwan says, I'll tell you what, I will forgive him 100 sins. 100 sins I will forgive him. After that, I have to kill him. And that's why in that court of, Yudhishthir, when Shishupala goes on cursing, saying all bad words to Bhagwan Krishna, Bhagwan was only smiling and counting. Because he had promised his mother that for 100 times, I will not touch him. I will forgive his 100 sins. So each word that he spoke, Bhagwan was just smiling, standing there and smiling. And all he was doing was counting. 1, 2, 3, 4. And when he reached 100, that's when he releases the Sudarshan Chakra and kills Shishupala. But Bhagwan also was born with four arms. And Bhagwan could withdraw his two arms at any time he wanted. It is said that he actually, when he had lifted Draupadi at some point, he had used all his four arms. Okay, so Swakam Rupa means the one with which he was born. So he shows him that, and then he comes down again into the Manusha form, into the human form. So the human form then has got two arms. Okay, this is Sanjay telling Dhritarashtra. All right, then Arjuna Uvacha. Now the meter changes. That is what tells us that now Arjuna also has calmed down, because all the previous meters were different, Trishtup, and now this is Anushtup. We are back into our normal this thing. Drishtavedam Anusham Rupam Tava Saumyam Janardana Idanim Asmi Samvrattaha Sacheta Prakrutim Gataha. Arjuna said, having seen this thy gentle human form, O Janardhan, now I am composed and am restored to my own nature. And that the meter, change in meter, is also an indication of his mood, his mindset. This is what. So Drishtavedam, now he saw the Manusha Rupa. First it was Swakam, four arms. This Manusha Rupa means only two arms. So now absolutely normal. Bhagwan is now absolutely like a human being only. And Janardana, Jana iti Maya Ardana. Jana, Janardana, the break of the word is Jana iti Maya. Ardana is to kill. And Maya is to kill Maya. So he's referring to him as Janardana, means you are the one that can destroy Maya. Why? Because Maya is yours and you are the one that can destroy. And you have destroyed my delusion. This is what he's referring to by using the word Janardana. And so he says, now I'm composed and I'm restored, basically. So I'm happy. I've come back to my original aura. Now, again, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Again, the meter is now changed. Okay, completely changed. Sudur darshamidam rupam drishtavanasi anmama deva apyasya rupasya nityam darshana kankshinah. The Blessed Lord said, very hard indeed it is to see this form of mine which you have seen. Even the gods are ever longing to behold this form. So Bhagwan, Durdasham is difficult, and Su, very, very difficult. That's why the Su is added. Means very, very difficult. So Bhagwan is saying it is very difficult for anybody. Actually, nobody had seen this form. I don't know if I have no, like in Bhagavat and all, we don't see all this, you know. So nobody had seen it before Arjun, and nobody has seen it after Arjun. So he says it's extremely difficult to see this form, which I have shown you because you asked, and my grace is upon you. And even the gods, you know, the means the denizens of the heavens. So the higher evolved beings also want to see this form, but they can't. So telling Arjun that you are extremely lucky to have seen this form. And once again, Bhagwan then says, Naham vedairna tapasa nadanena chejaya shakya evam vidho drashtum drishtavanasi mam yatha. Neither by the Vedas, nor by austerity, nor by gift, nor by sacrifice can I be seen in this form as you have seen me in your present mental condition. Previously also he had said the same thing. So neither by the Vedas means neither by studying the Vedas. Okay, if a person is only intellectually studying and chanting the Vedas, studying and chanting is falling under karma. Please remember, there's a lot of misunderstanding. People think mission is knowledge based. So whatever we are doing in the mission is Jnana Marga. It is not. We are studying, we are reading, I'm speaking, you're listening. It's all falling under karma. So this neither by the Vedas meaning just reading the Vedas. If whatever is told in the Vedas, you bring it into your own life, you make that knowledge into wisdom, think about it. In Mundaka Upanishad, we'll see there the guru says there is a higher knowledge and a lower knowledge. All this is falling under lower knowledge. And lower knowledge cannot reach you, take you to the supreme reality. You have to go into the higher knowledge. We'll see exactly what it is when we do the Upanishad. So this Vedas means studying the Vedas, not by austerity, tapas. Tapas gives purification of the mind. It does not give knowledge. Okay. So tapas, we have talked about tapas. There can be tapas at the physical level, mental level. You know, when we fast, when students are, exam is coming, then for 1 month, they won't go for parties or see movies. All that falls under tapas. But it is also action. In Tulsi Ramayan, Parvati did a ghor tapas she does. Even Dhruva did great tapas, right? And then ultimately when Bhagwan came, what did he ask for? He asked for a place where nobody should throw me out of. That's all he asked. Something, you know, place he asked. He didn't ask for liberation. Afterwards, many years, then he ruled. And then when he went to that place, when it is said that Narad Bhagwan went there one day. And he was very sad. Dhruva was very sad. So Narad Bhagwan asked him, why are you so sad? You got what you wanted. He said, I was stupid. I should have asked for liberation. I saw Bhagwan standing in front of me and I had just asked for this. Now I realize it. So this tapas gives you purity but doesn't give you knowledge. Same thing with Parvati ji. She did ghor tapas in the Himalayas for Shivji. She got married. She got him because that was the intention of a tapas. See, if you do tapas for a particular object, you will get that object. But that object cannot be Bhagwan. You cannot get Bhagwan by doing physical tapas. So then because her mind was very, very purified, then when Shivji gave her knowledge, she realized, she understood what it was. So that's why he says that by austerity, tapas, nor by gift is dana, charity, giving. These should all be done. Huh? Please understand that just because Bhagwan says that none of this will bring you to me, it doesn't mean we should not do. We need them. We need the study of the Vedas to understand what Bhagwan is. We need the tapas to, you know, purify our mind. We need to do charity. All these things we need to do, but knowing their limitations. This is what, okay? And all this will not give you the vision of this form as you have seen me. Okay, so Bhagwan is again making him understand that it is my grace and my grace alone. All right, now 44 and 54 and 55, as usual, if you look at all the previous chapters, in the last one or two verses he will connect it to the next chapter 12. So now begins the connection to the next one. Bhaktya tvananyaya shakya ahamevam vidhurjuna jnatum drashtum cha tatvena praveshtum cha parantapa. But see, the question is, he said, what cannot give you the vision of the form? Okay, this cannot give me. Then what will give me the form? Now he's telling that. Okay, that's why it starts with a but. Generally, statement doesn't start with a but. So you know that it is a continuation from the previous one. If you do tapas and dana and study the Vedas, you can't. But, that's why but. By the single-minded devotion, can I of this form be known and seen in reality and also entered into, O Parantapa, O scorcherer of your foes? So he now brings in devotion because the next chapter is going to deal only with what devotion is. All right. So he's bringing in that connection. He says, Ananya Bhakti. Now, we'll be talking a lot about Ananya Bhakti. I'm just going to introduce it. He says, that will not give. But if you are an Ananya is exclusive. And what is exclusive is an example. When Draupadi was being derobed, she already was a great devotee of Lord. She was, you know, he was like her brother and all that. Yet she went to all the kings who were sitting there, right? Bhishma was there, Dronacharya was there. She went to them. Then she held her sari on her own. And then she was actually holding it in her two fingers. Till then, Bhagwan didn't come. He didn't come. Because he said, okay, you are trying to get help from others, then you go get. And when finally she gave, and she actually held her hands like this, like Alexander, you know, it said that when he died, his hands were like this outside of the coffin. So he said, keep my hands like this so that people know that after I've conquered so much land, I'm taking nothing. When she did this, Bhagwan came. And that is Ananya. Like when you give up all other supports of the world. We think I have good pension. Money is my support. Children is my support. I have got good friends. I have got this. I have got that. As long as we keep thinking of these external things as my support, it is not Ananya Bhakti of the Lord. The devotee, he just depends on God. He says, Bhagwan, it is only you. Then it becomes Ananya, where it is excluding everything else in the world. Everything else. That time, when you give up all the other supports, Bhagwan will come and support. That is what is meant by Ananya Bhakti. This word will come again in chapter 12 and we will talk about it in detail. But this is what Shakya, he said, it is possible. If this person does Ananya Bhakti to me, then it is possible that he can see this form. Okay? Nyatum drashtum chatat. And nyatum, no. See, drashtum is to see. It's not just a seeing of the form. It is also knowing tattvataha in essence. The one, even in previous chapters, he has said, the one who knows me in essence, and to know Bhagwan in essence is to become one with him. There is no knowing, you cannot know Bhagwan as an object. That is not possible. If you think that you know Bhagwan as an object, it's false knowledge. You have to know Bhagwan as your own self, as the very subject of everything. And that's why he says, Nyatum drashtum cha tatvena, and one who knows and one who sees. Seeing is becoming. Mundaka Upanishad again will say, the one who sees Brahman becomes Brahman. So, Nyatum drashtum cha tatvena, praveshtum cha, means he will enter me. Enter means, physically means he will become one with me. Right? Parantapa, O scorcherer of foes. So, this is what he's now connecting. And now in 55, just like he had done in chapter 7 and used some new terms, now again he uses some new terms, which will, of course, in detail be explained in the next chapter, but we'll explain them here as well. Matkarmakrat mat paramaha madbhakta sangha varjitaha nirvaira sarvabhuteshu yasamameti pandava. He who does actions for me. There are six things in this verse. Huh? So he who does actions for me, who looks upon me as the supreme, who is devoted to me, who is free from attachment, who bears enmity towards none, he comes to me, O Pandava. So the first three things are mat karma. See, this mat word is there. Mat karma. Karma, actions. Who does actions for me. Mat means for me. So one who does action. Then mat paramaha means the one who looks at me as the supreme. Okay. Mat bhakta, he's devoted to me alone. Ananya bhakti. Just me alone. He depends only on me. then this Sangha Varjita, so he's free from all attachments. Why? Because Ananya Bhakti, when you do, when you get totally attached to Bhagwan, everything else you get detached from. That's what Gurudev has said, attach and detach. You know, attach to the higher and then you'll detach from the lower. So you need to, we, what we do, you know, we do half-half. We are attached to Bhagwan. We are, nobody can say that, no, I don't, especially in the mission. We'll all say, I also say. But then little attachment is there towards family also, house also, money also, whatever, you know. So we are like half-half. So what he's putting a condition is that, no, it cannot be half. You cannot have the world and have me either. That's not possible. You need to let go of the world at one point. So Sangavar, Nirvaira, absolutely no vaira is enmity. Absolutely no. Sarva Bhuteshu, Adveshta Sarva Bhutanam will come in chapter 12. Who is my greatest devotee? The one who has no hatred towards anybody. Sarva Bhuteshu here means humans and animals and plants. Bhuta here is not just humans. It's all beings. Yasa Maam Eti Pandava, that he will come to me. Eti is to come. Maam, he will come to me. So now let's look at this Mat Karma. He who does all actions for me. We have seen this as a principle in Karma Yoga. This is now what will tell us that Bhakti and Jnana is not separate. Also, Karma Yoga cannot happen unless there is love, unless there is Bhakti. So, Mat Karma means every action to be done. Remember the principles of Karma Yoga, huh? Every action to be done as a duty, every action to be done without attachment, with surrender to the higher altar, with samatha, and then with prasad buddhi. So all those definitions, they fall under mat karma, means every action. Not, this is not meaning that you do puja. No. Even your breathing, your eating, your walking, your talking, when you go to office, every action that you do, if you do with those principles of Karma Yoga, it becomes Mat Karma. This is fulfilled. So this bhakti requisite is fulfilled if you really do every action as a Karma Yoga. If you follow those five principles of Karma Yoga that we studied in chapter 3, it becomes Mat Karma. Because you're doing it as a duty, you're doing it without attachment, you're doing it as a surrender. You are accepting all the results that come, because so acceptance of all results indicates that you know that everything has come from Bhagwan. Whether it is the result that you want or the result that you don't want, who is gauge? There is not some other entity that is giving you that result. That means it is only Bhagwan. So that recognition is there. If that recognition is there, you will have the prasada buddhi. You will have the calmness of mind to accept whatever comes. So when you follow those principles, already this mat karma is fulfilled. So don't think that mat karma means some special karma now I have to find and then I have to do it for the Lord. Nothing special. Your own duty, whatever is your duty in your life, in your position, in your condition, whatever it is, you know. Now, as Mrs. Kapahi was telling me the other day, she's 90 plus. She said, I get tired even doing japa. Because, you know, 91, and then she broke her hip and all that. So she said, so I told her, you just think now. You know, just think. Don't have to take the name of the Lord even. Because in that condition, that is all she can give. She can do. Right? So in whatever condition, so whatever work you have to do in your position in life, you do it with those principles, mat karma is fulfilled. Now, mat karma at the level of the body, physical level. Mat paramaha. Mat parama means considering me as supreme. This is at the level of the intellect. We have three levels, body, mind, and intellect. So mat karma is body, mat parama is intellect. Now, see, when we do, all of us have worked, say, in the bank or wherever. We work for somebody, we work for a firm, we work for a organization. We don't consider that as supreme. So he says, whatever work you do, in the back of your mind, you must keep that I am the supreme when that is the goal that I have to reach. So even when you're doing your day-to-day work, you're going to job, and yes, you are doing the job for money. Yes, nobody is denying that. But don't just do it, I'm doing it only for money. In the back of your mind, you must have the goal that ultimately I have to reach the supreme reality. So even this work, I should do it with the principles of karma yoga. That's why when you do it with the principles of karma yoga, already this mat param also gets fulfilled. It's not, you know, it's not like different compartments that I will do karma yoga this way and then mat karma I'll do this way and mat param I'll do this way. There's nothing like, everything is intertwined. So when you have that thing in mind that my final goal is to reach that supreme reality, then every action that you're doing, you will always have that in mind. And therefore this, he says, it's not just doing the action, but it is also keeping in mind that I am the supreme most, mat parama. And mat bhakta, devoted to me. See, I worked for the bank. Was I devoted to the bank? I mean, for the 8 hours, of course, I went and did my work sincerely. Okay. But I didn't think that the bank was the supreme most, that the bank was my be all and end all of life. I knew I had to retire someday and I needed the money. And so I worked. So now what Bhagwan is saying is whatever work you do in the back of your mind, if we follow the tenets of karma yoga, love for God is there. Without love, nobody can do karma yoga. They cannot do. Okay. So this is at these three levels, he's saying. At the level of the body, and all these three words will come again in chapter 12. But he's introducing these terms now. Then what happens is Sangha Varjita, actually when the person does the first three, Mat Karma, Mat Parama and Mat Bhakta, he becomes Sangha Varjita. You know what it is? He's getting attached to the higher, the lower is getting automatically detached. Now, again, Olympics are coming in Japan, Summer Olympics, right? I'm sure there are athletes who are competing for the gold. Now, everything else, they are totally detached because the focus is only on that goal. So this is what is saying. He will automatically, Bhagwan is saying he should be Sangha Varjita, but Sangha Varjita, the detachment from other things will come automatically when the person attaches to the higher. So it's not a separate again compartment. Oh, now I have to do this. Now I have to get detached. It'll be automatic. Sangha Varjita. And Nirvaira. So, you know, if you have a correct understanding of God, then you know that it is the self in you only. Then the self in you is in the self in all. Even though we have not realized it, if we get established in this fact that everybody is a child of God, either you take it that way, like the Brahma Kumaris say, if everybody is a child of God, then everybody is your brother and everybody is your sister. So you cannot have enmity towards them. In bhakti, you will, if you're devoted to one Ishta Devata, your favorite deity, you will see that deity in every people, every person. So how you will have enmity? When you see he was your enemy, but now you look at him and you see your Ishta Devata. Now how you will have enmity towards that person? You can't. Or then if you take even Vishishta Advaita, which is, they say we are a part of God. Can my left hand hate my right hand? They're both my parts. How one part can hate another part? So even if you take it that way, there cannot be any enmity. There will not be any enmity. Therefore he says, Nirvair Advesh, I told you, Advesha will come. Advesha Sarva Bhutanam. That will be the first condition that Bhagwan will put in chapter 12. So Sarva Bhuteshu, the one who does these things, the first three he can do, he will automatically become Sangha Varjita. He will automatically become Nirvair. Five things, and towards all, and then he will come to me. So this is the end of this chapter. We'll read this because we have time. I want to, because we have to go into chapter 12 itself, I just want to do a little bit of introduction. No need to get the book. I'm not going to go into the verses, but a little bit of connection and verses. So let's read the Pushpika, and we'll read the first verse of this chapter, as is our practice. And if anybody has any questions about this chapter, we'll take those and then we'll proceed for a little bit. Okay. All right. Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishad Su Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade Vishwarupa Darshane Yogo Nama Ekadashodhyayah. I'm going to chant the first verse and then we'll give time for questions. Arjuna Vacha Madanugrahaya Paramam Guhyam Adhyatma Sanjitam Yatva Yoktam Vachastena Mohoyam Vigato Mama. So by God's grace, Gurudev's blessings, we have completed another beautiful chapter, 11. Any questions with regards to this chapter? All okay? All right. Chitra, if you have a question, you need to unmute yourself.
Yeah.
And now I can hear you. I can't hear you. No, you have not unmuted. I can see you have not unmuted.
Okay.
Now you're unmuted.
Okay, the question is one in many, many in one.
Yeah.
This chapter is one in many. Or what is this called? Like
this is many in one.
Many in one. Okay, I want to write that. That's why I asked you.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, he saw all the multitude, right? He saw everything, but in one form.
In vibhutis, all the vibhutis.
It's all he saw in one form, na? This huge form where he saw all the rivers, the mountains, this thing, people dying, people getting born. All he saw in one form.
Okay, got it. Now I can understand.
Okay. So as per some commentators, I told you before that they have divided Bhagavad Gita into three parts. Tvam Padam Shodhanam 1 to 6, 7 to 12. So we are now going to be in the last part of the Tat Padam Shodhanam and then the Asi part, Tatvam Asi, the Asi 13 to 18. All right. So from chapter 1 to 6, Tat Tvam Padam Shodhanam, Shodhanam there means purification. So it is purification of the Jiva. And the principles of Karma Yoga have been given, which we have seen. I'm not going to elaborate on them. But the result of that Karma Yoga, like how do I know that I have done Karma Yoga correctly? How do I know that? At the level of the body, the sense organs have to be now completely under control. Okay, at the level of the mind, the past, we must, as seekers, as spiritual seekers, we must never bring the past into the present. The past, like Gurudev always has said, is dead and gone, and there's really no point digging up, you know, things. So if we can remove the past, and if we have followed the principles of Karma Yoga and purified, what is the meaning of the mind being purified? One of the meanings, of course, the common meaning is that likes and dislikes have to be reduced. But the other meaning also is that the mind will be calm and the mind must remain in the present. So past, there's nothing. We will not worry or have any hope about the past. But even about the future, we must not have hopes and worries. It'll come, hope and all this will come in chapter 16, that we have this hope and we are tied to the hope. I hope that tomorrow this will happen. I hope. And tomorrow is not it may not come. That's the whole thing. We don't know. It's an imagination. See, future is an imagination. Past is dead. If we look at our mind, we are either in the past or we are imagining the future. And we are never in the present. So the result of the purification of the jiva, the jivatma, should be that the sense organ should be extremely under control by now. And the mind should not go into the past that much. It will. It will go, but not as before, as much. Well, how do I know I've progressed? This is the, you know, this is an internal measure. And that's why only you can know. Nobody else can know. right? How do you know who will know whether my mind is in the past or in the future or it is in the present? Only I will know. So that. And then at the intellectual level, the doership should be reduced. Because this ego is at the level of the intellect. This I notion, I did it, I do and I will enjoy, I will do and I will get the fruit. That I, which is the small I, as Gurudev used to say, is in the intellect. So at the level of the body, control of the sense organs, at the level of the mind, trying to remain more and more and more in the present. That's why the power of now by Eckhart Tolle. It's now, when the mind is in the now. And at the level of the intellect, when the doership is quite a bit reduced. So instead of saying, I did it, if we can have the mindset that I became an instrument in doing something for the Lord. You can, when you say to other people, you can say, okay, that's why it's outside drama, inside drama. That is what you can say. I did it. I completed this project. We are not asking you to say that these things in the office, but in your mind, you must have the notion that, thank you, Lord, I became an instrument and you helped me do this. That sort of feeling should always be in the mind. Outside in your transactional world, of course, you'd say, yeah, you'd put your signatures on stuff. Everything, that all stays, but the mindset. Okay, so when these three purifications have happened at the level of the body, at the level of the mind, at the level of the intellect, then you are ready for meditation, which is chapter 6. And then in the seat of meditation, meditation can happen only when the mind is calm. If the mind is running here and there, helter skelter, yet we must do meditation. I'll tell you why, to create vasanas for our next birth. Even if the mind wanders, japa and meditation for a little while must be done by all spiritual seekers. Maybe in the morning time is the best time. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, if you can just sit at one place and just try to be calm without, you know, that whole to-do list on your head. Life is, sometimes, even now my life is a list of to-dos sometimes. But take 5 minutes out of there, forget the to-do list. These 5 minutes are meant for my meditation and create those vasanas for the next birth. Vasanas are created by repetition. Okay. So instead of repeating our extroverted behavior, if we can repeat something which is making us introverted, we will develop that vasana. We will create that vasana for ourselves and we'll deepen it. So meditation comes. In the seat of meditation, Bhagwan said, you fix your mind on me. Except he never told us what me is. So therefore, from 7 onwards, Tat Padam Shodhanam starts. And here Shodhanam means discovery, not purification. There is nothing to be purified in the Supreme Reality. So what starts from 7 is the discovery of the self. And therefore, in chapter 7, Bhagwan gave his para, apara, and then Turiya state. So there is the Jiva, the Ishvara, and then something beyond, I'm beyond both of them. That is my real nature. This is my lower nature, the planets and the stars and the moon and the ego and et cetera, et cetera. But this is my higher nature. So in chapter 7, he gave that. Introduced some new words at the end of it, because of which there was a little bit of a digression in chapter 8, where Krama Mukti was explained. And because of those new words, Arjun asked for the meaning of those words. So they were explained, Adhyatma, Adibhuta, Adiyajna, etc. And there Bhagwan made a statement that whoever remembers me at the very end will come to me. Please don't think that you will remember. If all your life you have not remembered Bhagwan, at the last minute, there's no way that thought is going to come. And so the meaning of that is that means right from now you start thinking of me, so that at the very end you will think of me and you will come to me. So a little bit of a digression, but he comes back in chapter 9, the royal secret, to tell us of his highest nature and again how to get it. And Sutre Manigana Iva, he gives the essence. Rasoham of Sukhaunteya, etc. So where I am the, in water, I'm the essence of water, this, that, he gives. And then in chapter 10, his vibhutis, all the things we saw in this external world, that learn to see me. It is the money that he explained in 10, because he used the term sutre mani gana eva. He explained the sutra in 7 and 9, and in 10 he explained the money. So if for those who are not yet capable of having that subtle thinking, okay, your thinking is very gross, look at a gross object and think, come to me. So that was one in the many. Okay, you see that one. So in Himalaya it is him, in Ganges it is him, Samaveda it is him, this is him. So there are many things, and in that many things you see the one. And then Arjun wanted to see the form. So in the one thing he showed the many chapter 11. In one form he showed all. So both were fulfilled. They are in me, I am not in them, they are in me, right? He had said that. So many and then one, to see the essence, to see the one in the many, and then the many in the one, like, you know, opposite. So this is what happened in chapter 10 and 11. And now again, he introduced these terms. At the end of this 11, like he said, that by Vedas and this and that, nobody can get, be able to see this form. Those who are mat karma, mat parama and mat bhakta, those who do all the actions for me, consider me as supreme and love me. Three conditions they have to do for me. We do work, that's why I told you, we do work, but we do not consider for whom we are working, that organization or whatever, as supreme. We do not, there are so many people who don't like their jobs. They just do it because they need the money. So if we don't love the organization also, we don't consider it as supreme. But here what he's saying is, you must not only do the work, all work for me, but also consider me as supreme. And therefore now what is happening is, the chapter 12 will begin again with a question by Arjuna. What has happened is that he has seen this, you know, this rupa, this form he has seen now, and he has heard about the essence. The nirguna essence he heard, no, in chapter 7, chapter 9, he heard that. Then he saw all these vibhutis, and then he saw this form. Now he has a question, because saguna sakar is there, nirguna sakar is there. What bhakti should we do? Like, should we do bhakti to nirguna or should we do bhakti to saguna? And which one is superior? Once again, in the beginning of chapter 3 also, if you remember, he asked the question, jnana is superior, you're telling, but you're asking me to do karma. So what one should I do? Which one should I do? Same type of question is coming again. He says, you said nirguna, you said saguna. Now you're saying madbhakta. Now this devotion, should it be to saguna or should it be to nirguna? That is the question that now will begin the chapter 12. A very beautiful chapter, very small chapter, 20 verses, can be chanted in like 5 minutes. Chapter 12 and chapter 15 are the smallest chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. They are both 20 verses each. And if you can memorize both, I don't have 12 memorized, I'll be honest. 15 is memorized and I chant it on a daily basis. 15 you should chant on a daily basis if you can. It takes only 5 minutes. And generally when somebody passes, for the first 13 days, they chant both these, 12 and 15. These are instructions from Gurudev. Gurudev had given these instructions many years ago when somebody had passed in Vancouver. And the wife had phoned and he said, read these two. That time we were just reading. We were very new. I was also new. She was also. So we were reading. But that is. So the entire topic of bhakti will be in chapter 12. It will be the culmination of the tat pada shodhanam, the discovery of the self. That will be the end of it. From 13 onwards, we start the explanation of the term asi, the oneness between the two. The other thing about devotion is in chapter 2, if you remember when we did, there were the sthita prajna lakshana from the 18 verses at the very end, 56 to 72, were the characteristics of a jnani, of a realized person. Now there'll be a portion characteristics of the last 12 or something verses, characteristics of a bhakta. That is going to come in this chapter. And when we look at the characteristics of a Ananya Bhakta, I told you Ananya word is going to come. Ananya Bhakta and the Sthita Prajna, the characters are the same. The characteristics are the same. They're the same. That is what will tell us. We think bhakti is different, separate, and knowledge is different, separate. They're not. Highest point of knowledge and highest point of bhakti, they're one and the same. In the beginning, they start as separate ones. Knowledge starts with like only intellectual and formless and this and that. And bhakti starts with a form and etc. and duality, etc. But in the highest stage, in the last stage, they're one and the same. So with that introduction, so next time, do bring your chapter 12 book so that we can go into the verses proper. Any questions? Okay. So I will see you next week, next Monday. Okay.
Jayanji, I had one question.
Yes.
When we go to these Mahasamadhi camps and all of that,
yes,
they generally chant 15 out there,
yeah,
when we have our food.
Yes.
So, but like you said that, like at the time of death also, we should be chanting that, right?
Yeah.
After.
Yeah.
So what is the...
I'll tell you why. See, the 15th chapter is Purushottama Yogaha. And the 15th chapter has the entire essence of the Bhagavad Gita. Because to chant the entire Bhagavad Gita, it takes 3 hours. And in Kali Yuga, people do not have 3 hours. Chapter 15 is like chanting the whole Gita. Okay? One reason. The second reason is that in chapter 15, that is the only chapter where there is no Arjuna Uvacha. In this dialogue between Arjuna and Bhagwan, Arjuna represents ignorance, Bhagwan represents knowledge. So that chapter is entire knowledge. There is no trace of ignorance in that chapter. Okay. When we study that chapter, you will realize that just like a major Upanishad, it deals with all three, Jiva, Jagat, and Ishvara. It deals with all three topics. That is the entire Vedanta, the whole Vedantic base is who am I? Who is this Jiva? What is this creation? And who has created this creation? So there is the Jiva, me, the creation, and Ishvara, who is the creator, because I know that I'm not the creator. And these three topics are dealt with in chapter 15. In there also, the verse is there, Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva, right? I am that Vaishvanara, that digestive fire, which digests the food in your stomach, because of which it is chanted before meals. In Sandipani, even now, before the meals, there are the brahmacharis, we had to chant this thing. So that is why it is chanted. And because it deals with the entire, it is the essence of the entire Gita, it is chanted at the time of death. So that is the importance of the, it's a very, very important chapter. In 20 verses, Bhagwan has dealt with these three items, which nowhere else it has happened. And is the only chapter where there is no Arjuna Uvacha. There's no ignorance.
So what about those verses in chapter 2, like dealing with death?
Like they're not dealing with
Like, not dealing with death, but like they say, you know, that the right...
Masausi Jirnani and all that. They're dealing with the supreme, this thing. And some of those verses are chanted at funerals. But this Purushottama Yoga, at home you chant the whole thing. It is not chanted at the time of funeral. At the time of funeral, some of those verses are chanted. Vasamsi Jirnani, etc. That just as the body changes clothes, the Jiva is now changing clothes, etc. That is just to give an idea to the people.
Okay.
But not. 15 is a very, very important and very beautiful chapter. And that is the reason. So that's why it's chanted before meals. It is chanted because it's Purushottama Yoga. That's why it is called the Uttama Purusha in there. There also it will come Kshara, Akshara and Uttama. There, this Para, Apara Vidya in 7 will come there as Kshara, Akshara and Uttama Purusha. The three Purushas will come there again. That's why.
Thank you, Linganji.
And I'll tell you one thing about memorizing. You might feel that it will be so difficult, but I'll tell you the trick. What you have to do is for 15 days, you have to just open the book and read, look at the verses and read them every day once only. Don't have to like, and you'll find that at the end of the 15th day, it has been fully memorized. I have done it myself. That is how I memorized 15. I have told, there was somebody from Toronto said to me, there's no way that I can memorize it. I told her this. I said, sit down and do. And then, of course, I forgot. Many years later, I met her. She said, Jaya, you know, you told me. And I did memorize it. And that was the trick. So that is what I'm telling you. If you want to memorize anything, you just read for 15 days, though, but without fail every day. Discipline. Just read it from the text, and at the end of it, it'll just come. It just comes. Okay. All right. Now that we'll finish chapter 12. So just so that let me know what is the next text in your study scheme. Okay. Because I think 9, 10, 11, 12 were told in a like were told to me one after the other, which. Now 12 will start, and before we know it, it'll be complete. So that I have an idea what's coming next. All right. Okay. Have a good evening, a good week, and I will see you all next week, and we will start with chapter 12. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate Om Shanti Shanti. Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Okay, Harihi Om, everybody. And how do I leave the meeting?